Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on insurance as a crime when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, that's a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 not only practiced, they also advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it works automatically. It's just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. It didn't cost you anything to find out. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send us an email for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about insurance. Insurance is a crime. I've showed you here from the Bible that the correct modality instead of insurance is called strict liability. So if you're practicing strict liability, the theory behind it's fairly simple. God will protect you because you're practicing strict liability, which would tell us that you're practicing the Ten Commandment model. So if you're practicing the Ten Commandments, you get 33 benefits. One of the 33 benefits is this: everything that you put your hand to do will prosper. Now, that's about the most valuable of the 33 benefits. As a general contractor, I've made a lot of deals, made a lot of bids, done a lot of work that I didn't get paid for. Not everything I put my hand to do prospered. Sometimes I lost my shirt. The benefit that I get for every time you make a bid, every time you make a deal, that it's going to make you money, is the single single most valuable benefit in dollars and cents out of these 33 benefits that we get for practicing the Ten Commandment model. Now, it is not a benefit to you to have your house blown down or washed away in Biloxi, Mississippi, or to be starved out because of a drought out in California, or to have your house or your property burned up in a wildfire. Those are not benefits. Those are curses. And those curses come upon us by what's known as time and chance. Time and chance. The roll of the dice. Now, most people believe in the roll of the dice. They're walking down the street. They're breathing. They suck in a polio virus, and sure enough, they end up with polio. Well, roll of the dice. They don't see disease as being the results of broken law. So we need health insurance. We just never know when we're going to have a heart attack, get cancer, muscular dystrophy, Lou Gehrig's disease, catastrophic illness, Alzheimer's. So we got to have insurance. Now, there are 19 of these health laws in the Bible. I'll just pass it on to you. 19. And they deal with things like cancer and heart attack and stroke and Alzheimer's disease. If you practice these 19 health laws, the Ten Commandment model, you will not get sick. You're guaranteed under contract, under the terms and conditions of a deal that was made by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you're entitled to 70 years of life. 70 years of healthful, trouble-free, sickness-free life, guaranteed by the creator of the universe himself. He made a deal, and he said, I will honor my word to 1,000 generations. Now, the entire history of the world doesn't amount to 1,000 generations. In 6,000 years, divided by 40, which is a generation, there's only 150 generations between Adam and Eve and you. 150. That's it. Not 1,000. Now, God guaranteed you these benefits. There's 33 of them. Now, if you're going to violate the terms and conditions of the contract, for instance, one of the terms and conditions is you don't eat pig. You don't eat fat. And you don't eat blood. Now, here in America, not very many people eat blood, but most people eat fat. We get our daily dose of fat from McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King. Because as a matter of law, they have mandated 30% fat into our hamburger. We got a law that says, you shall eat no manner of fat. That came from God. Then we've got the legislature that says, thou shalt eat 30% fat in thy hamburger. And so, you know, you've got a right to make a choice. You've got a duty, in fact, to make a choice. And that choice is, well, shall I eat the fat or not? That's why I don't eat at McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King. Not that their products don't taste real good. They taste real good. Problem is, they're full of fat. Fat plugs up your arteries. They call that atherosclerosis. Here in America, we have the highest incidence of cardiovascular disease in the world. 750,000 people a year die from heart attack and stroke or cardiovascular disease. And it's caused primarily by all of the fat that we eat. Not entirely, but primarily. I would say this, if you're going to eat fat, you need health insurance. If you're going to eat pig, you need health insurance. If you're not going to practice these 10 planks or these 10, not 10 planks, but the 10 commandments, you need health insurance. I don't deny it. Now, last time I said, I'm going to show you how to get to the insurance company and make them pay. Well, number one, you shouldn't have insurance anyway. That's number one. But, you know, if you've come to the conclusion that I'm not going to practice the Ten Commandment model, and I am going to eat fat, I'm going to eat blood, and I'm going to eat pig, well, then okay. You make your choice, and now you need insurance. So now if you want to make the insurance company pay, get your pen and paper out over here, and let's sharpen our pencil on both ends, and let me show you how to do that. In order to make the insurance company pay, remember, this is an adhesion contract, and the insurance company writes it. All you're going to do is accept it or reject it. Well, since you're going to accept the insurance contract, because you don't have any input into it, and it's a take it or leave it process, then you're going to take the contract. So therefore, you need to read the terms and conditions of the contract so that you know and understand what you're going to receive when the event transpires. So if you're going to buy hurricane insurance down in Biloxi, Mississippi, you should make up your mind that you're going to pay the premium, and that if there is a wind that blows your house down, you get paid. You win. But if the wind doesn't blow your house down, but the tidal surge does, then you've got to have flood insurance in addition to the straight line insurance, because without the flood insurance, they won't pay. I already showed you that. Therefore, you beat the insurance company by making sure that you've got both the straight line hurricane insurance and the flood insurance so that they can't weasel out of it. And it's going to cost you more money. You got to pay a higher premium. But if you don't, you get paid nothing. See how simple that is? Now, the better of the two choices over here is don't buy the insurance. Practice the Ten Commandments, and then God Almighty Himself has a duty to protect you and your property. I like that deal. It was a seemed like a better deal to me, and so I bought into it. It's worked well for me, so I would just add my 2 cents worth it. I don't have the insurance. I put the premiums in my slush fund can. Now, there's a second factor that comes in here, which I call the common sense factor. Common sense factor. And that deals with, should you live in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans? Should you even live there? The other day I told you about the guy that had his house on a cul-de-sac down below the dike on the Mississippi River there in New Orleans. I couldn't believe that anybody in his right mind would live in such a place. Now, of course, you people that live in New York City, you know, you live there and you accept it. I was there a couple of times. I looked at that place and I said, I can't believe anybody in his right mind would live in a place like this. But, you know, I guess there's people that like it. And I said the same thing about New Orleans, and I guess you people down there in New Orleans must like the place. So if you're going to live in New Orleans, you need to understand that water seeks its own level, and that if you live in the Ninth Ward and God decides that He's going to punish all the people that live there, like Sodom and Gomorrah, then the water level, when it comes up to 9 feet, is going to be 9 feet in your house, just like it's going to be 9 feet in the guy next door and 9 feet on the guy on the other side of you. When the water level reaches 9 feet, you're going to get 9 feet in your house also. Now, there's an alternative. You could leave the place, like Lot, when he left Sodom and Gomorrah. God came in and said, hey, wake up here, smell the coffee, and get the hell out while the getting's good. Lot, his wife, and 2 daughters left. Then when the fire and brimstone came down, it just killed the guys that are there. If you're living in New Orleans, common sense would say, get out. Get out while the getting's good. And the reason I say that is Matthew 24 tells you to flee to the mountains. Flee to the mountains. Do not flee to the seacoasts. Do not flee to the valleys and the low spots. Flee to the high ground. Okay, now you got your warning. Told you that's where God told you to go. Now, if I lived in New Orleans and I was concerned about another hurricane, flood waters, living below sea level, I think I would leave New Orleans. Have you thought about Baton Rouge? It's a little above sea level. Now, it's a wild new concept. If you're living on the seacoast, that is in Biloxi, and you just love it there, have you thought about leaving the beach and maybe moving inland, a mile? Could you do that? Now, some people are going to say, I just have to live right on the beach. Okay. Have you noticed that not every house on the beach gets blown down? You go along and you'll see, we saw this one time, I think it was in Wichita Falls, Texas. I had a big sale down there one time with Western Sales, and we came in after they were rebuilding and one thing another. But I was struck. I'd never seen a hurricane disaster area before, and I was struck by the fact that there were houses in blocks where some houses were removed, and all that was left was a concrete pad. And other houses next door to the concrete pad were still there. Some of them had very little damage. And there were some cases where they had almost no damage. I don't know if anybody got away without any damage, but many houses didn't have very much. And we rented a house there, the crew did, during the sale. All the salesmen lived in this one house. And they had some damage to the back porch. But there were houses in that block where they were just gone. Some were half destroyed, and some were just totally destroyed and gone and removed, and some of them hadn't been touched. Now, that's what I call the fickle finger of fate. Can you say that, boys and girls? The fickle finger of fate. And it looks like to me that God himself said, well, we'll knock that house out and we'll leave that one. Knock that house out and we'll leave that one. Because that tornado went through Wichita Falls back about 1980, I think it was. 79, 80, 81, along there. It was a mile wide. That thing was a mile wide. And there was a shopping center I drove by. Hell, that thing must have been a quarter of a mile long. Maybe even a quarter of a mile wide. Great, but all that was out there was parking lot and cement. Now, the tornado didn't take the cement in the parking lot, but there wasn't a thing left. I mean, all you had out there was concrete. Had about a quarter of a mile square concrete pad out there, and that was it. And I looked at that, and I said, oh, my God. I just wiped everything right out of there. Took it all. Now, that's a lot of power. Now, around that concrete pad, there were other buildings that hadn't been destroyed. So that's what tells me that if you'll obey God and keep his commandments, even though you're living in Wichita Falls and a tornado comes through and it's a mile wide, he can protect you. And after all, that's what you people are praying for. I remember that down in New Orleans, you know, when Hurricane Katrina was on its way, he had 7 days. 7 days. He had 7 days to pray. He had 7 days to move out. Well, many people moved out. Well, now, I'm sure all you people out there were just praying like crazy, and did you notice that the prayers didn't really avail you a hell of a lot? During the hurricane came, wiped you out, and now you're fighting with the insurance company trying to get your money. All right, now let's tuck that away in our heart, and let's take a look here at a story here called The Red Squad Abuses Prove Costly. It takes 5 minutes. Listen to this. Chicago. This is in October of 1985, reported from USA Today. A federal judge yesterday approved a $306,000 settlement for 20 plaintiffs who were spied on by the police Red Squad. The decision cleared the way for five others to test the constitutionality of surveillance during the turbulent 60s and 70s. The settlement money implies what the police did was unconstitutional. But it's not exactly the same as an actual court decision saying that, said Richard Gutman, who's an attorney who has represented the plaintiffs since their lawsuit was filed back in 1974. The settlement worked out between Gutman and attorneys for the city last month and approved during a brief appearance before U.S. District Court Judge Susan Getzendener provides for payments of $20,000 to each of the 10 organizations and $10,000 each to 10 individuals, and if the five remaining plaintiffs win their case, they would receive the same sums provided in the settlement. If they lose, Gutman and the other plaintiffs have agreed to share the settlements approved yesterday. Now, the plaintiffs selected the 5-3 individuals, that is the five, three individuals and two groups, to test the constitutional issue. And included in the stipulation of facts were admissions by the city that a police unit dubbed the Red Squad had engaged in spying against the 25 plaintiffs, and then they kept written files on their activities, said Gutman and attorney Peter Fitzpatrick, who represented the city. Last December, Chicago police files obtained under the Freedom of Information Act disclosed that the squad traded information with more than 150 law enforcement agencies in more than 30 states. All right. What's that got to do with insurance? It's got everything to do with insurance, because in most municipalities, they carry insurance. And the reason they want limited liability is because they're sitting there saying, well, we don't know but what our actions here may be unconstitutional, and if they are, we may damage somebody, they'll sue us, and it'll cost us a lot of money. So we want an insurance company to come in here, protect us. We want limited liability. Now, I'm going to tell a little story here. I had a student one time by the name of Fred, and Fred lived in Deming, New Mexico. And Deming had a statute on the books. It's an identification statute that required, this is the city council now, this is your city ordinance, requiring that if a policeman demands your identification, that you give it to him. Now, that runs counter to Brown versus Texas and Lawson versus Colander. So, Fred went to school here, and he chit-chatting a little bit about that, and he said, you know, I don't like that city ordinance or that statute. And I said, well, that city ordinance is unconstitutional, and like as not, Deming, New Mexico carries insurance. And because they carry insurance, that means that that's what we call a deep pockets defendant. And as I've said before, you know, this week, it's nothing personal. You know, it's just business. Insurance companies, you know, they're not getting personal with you people out there. They're business institutions, and their modus operandi, their goal in life is to make a profit. And there's the insurance company is selling you a insurance policy for the express purpose of collecting premiums, and then if they have to, they'll pay out, just like the croupier on a crap table. If he has to, he'll pay you if you win. But the thing is set up so that it's not very likely that you're going to win. Statistically, on a crap table, when you place your bet, you're not going to win. That's the bottom line. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to win at all at any time under any circumstances, because there are some people that are going to win. Insurance companies are simply doing the same thing. And so the city comes along, and sometimes the legislature mandates that they have insurance. They don't have any choice. So just like you, me, and everybody else, you have to have it because it's the law. See? And so Deming, New Mexico has liability insurance. So Fred looked into this ahead of time, and then he went down and he strapped on a .45 and walked down Main Street. It's not against the law to carry a gun on the streets of Deming, New Mexico, as long as it's not concealed. And it's not concealed. He's just walking down the street. Well, as he's walking down the street, pretty soon here comes a police car by, and the police car sees this guy walking down the street packing heat. So the police car flips a U-ey at the corner and pulls up alongside Fred, who's walking down the street. He rolls his window down. He says, hey, you, hey, come here. Fred stopped, bent down, looked through the window, and the policeman says, what's your name? Let me see some ID. And Fred said, am I under arrest? And the policeman said, no. And Fred said, I don't want to talk to you. And then he resumed his walk down the street. Now, the policeman's a little miffed now. And Fred said he stepped on the gas, peeled rubber, smoked his tires, slammed on his brakes. Opened his door, jumps out, gets around the front of his car, gets up in Fred's face and says to him, "I told you I want some ID." Now, you can tell this policeman at one time used to be a drill sergeant in the U.S. Marines. And he just wasn't used to some guy exercising some constitutional right, privilege, or immunity. And so he got up in Fred's face, and Fred said, "Am I under arrest?" And the guy said, "Yes, you're under arrest." Fred says, "Okay, I'll go quietly." But when the policeman searched him, Fred didn't have any identification on him. Now, here's this clear, plain city ordinance that says, "Thou shalt identify thyself to thy policeman." And this guy is plainly not identifying himself to the policeman. In fact, he doesn't even carry identification. Nothing. So they take him down to the police department and book him in and call him John Doe. And he bailed out. You know, it's a misdemeanor. And so he posted bail and he's gone. And so the case now comes up to trial, and Fred won the underlying case. You see, you don't have to identify yourself to a policeman. Now there's case, you know, somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, "Well, it's the law of Nevada. Haven't you read Heibel?" Yeah, I read Heibel. It's okay. You don't need to send me an email. I'm familiar with that. You see, 24 states have a Heibel statute like Nevada. And 26 states do not. And so your first job is to figure out, well, which group of states do you belong to? You know, if you're like California and Nevada, you've got a statute on the books that requires you to identify yourself to the policeman. Now, there's another rule that comes into play here. What if your name was Osama bin Laden? You know, just for instance. And to identify yourself, you know, "Hey, what's your name?" "My name is Osama bin Laden." Wouldn't that be violating your Fifth Amendment right to remain silent? And wouldn't your admission that "I am Osama bin Laden" then be an infringement of that Fifth Amendment right, not to mention the Fourth Amendment? And maybe one or two more. So there's other factors that come into this decision. So assuming that, you know, just for the sake of our discussion, like a state that doesn't require identification. Here in Missouri, for instance, when you're arrested, they take you to jail. They want to identify you. And they want to book you in and they want to fingerprint you. Well, we have a rule here, 30B2, that requires a search warrant if they want to do that, or a court order. So there are laws and rules and regulations that the police oftentimes don't know anything about. And they violate those laws, rules, and regulations. And when they violate those, that's called a crime. See, when a policeman violates your rights, that's as much a crime as if you walk into a 7-Eleven store with a gun and hold them up. Crime is crime. It's against the law to do that. Can you follow that? Now, to give you a little perspective here, how often do the police commit crimes? In a case called Miranda versus Arizona, you've probably heard about the Miranda rule, Miranda versus Arizona. There was a statement in there by the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said there's about 40,000 police agencies in the United States, 40,000, and every one of them commits about one civil rights crime or violation every day. Now, there's 365 days in a year. So if we took 40,000 and we hit the times button, 365, that's 14,600,000 crimes a year committed by the police. Yes, officer, it's true. You policemen out there commit 14,600,000 crimes a year. Now, when you go to the FBI and you ask them, how many serious crimes are committed in the United States every year, and they'll tell you about 14 million. Just about the same number, a little bit less. So if you want to know how many 7-Eleven stores get robbed and how many banks get robbed and how many people get murdered, you get about 14 million. But if you want to know how many crimes are committed by the police every year, it's 14,600,000. So the police commit more crime in America than the criminals do. Not by a whole lot, but by a little bit. Which makes a total of 28 million crimes. But only 14 million of them get reported. See, the 14,600,000 crimes committed by the police, they don't get reported because, see, the police don't report the police and the citizens don't report the police very often. But once in a while they do. Once in a while. And these are called civil rights cases. Civil rights cases. This is where citizens take the policeman in and prosecute him for his crime. Doesn't happen very often. Out of those 14,600,000, there's maybe 10,000 cases a year brought. Maybe. I doubt that. So I got to take a break here, and we're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you about a strip search award. And we'll talk a little about civil rights cases. Now, when insurance companies have to come in and defend, oh, they don't like that at all. Oh, they don't care for that. And I'll tell you a story here about a guy who I did a case against, a lawyer, you know, defending the county, and how much money it costs. And let me tell you, when the insurance company has to pay out a bunch of money, oh, they don't like that at all. And that changes policy around the counties and the cities. If you want to change policy in your city, you get the insurance company to talking to the chief of police and you'll get some real change. All right, meanwhile, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order one by simply calling and asking for it. And the number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give, however, don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or other partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear me make on this program, keep in mind now that those are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now let's talk a little here about the insurance industry or the claims manager. When a case goes to litigation, which I had a civil rights case some years back, went to litigation. Nice young fella, attorney named Tim, went in, defended the county, and he beat me. He won the case hands down. He felt pretty good about that, I'm sure. Jury came back with a verdict in favor of the county, denied my claims, and I walk out of there with nothing, not a dime. All right, now, it's not a total loss. And the reason that it's not a total loss is because the insurance company walked out of there with a bloody nose. And my old daddy explained it to me years ago. He said, son, when a bully is messing with you, you don't say anything. You just bust him in the nose and knock him on his ass. And you never want to tell him that you're going to do that, because if you tell him in advance, you'll never get the job done. You just sneak attack him, and you just bust him, knock him on his hiney, and when he's down there on the ground bleeding, he'll figure out what happened. He won't need any explanations at all. Well, one day I sued Webster County here in Missouri for a false arrest and false imprisonment, and we went to litigation, and sure enough, Tim Gammon, he beat me fair and square. And so after the trial, he's kind of rubbing it in a little bit. And so I said, well, Tim, listen, you did a hell of a job in your defense, and you done good, son. And you beat me, and I don't deny it. But I'll tell you, I'm gonna show you how fair I want to be about this. I said, I'm going to give you another shot at me. I'm going to come into town again. I'm going to do the same thing, and we'll see if we can get the sheriff to arrest me again, lock me up in jail, same charges, and just do the case over again. Just be a different set of circumstances, different time, different date. And he looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids. Who in the hell would want to get arrested and jailed, you know? Normal people don't want that. But once in a while, we need to get arrested and jailed, because if you want to test a legal issue, some criminal activities on the part of the police, you know, you have to have a damage. You have to be the first guy to ride the front of the bus, and so somebody's got to do it, and we call that guy the goat. And so I play the goat here quite often. I said, now, Tim, this case cost you $32,000. That's what he said. That's what he asked the court to award. He wanted $32,000. And this is what scares all you people. See, Rule 11 sanctions. But, hey, wait a minute. You know, if your case isn't frivolous, you don't have any Rule 11 sanctions to be worried about, and they can't collect attorney's fees and court costs from you because you're seeking justice. Come on, wake up. That's what they threaten you with. You'll have to pay attorney's fees and court costs when you lose. That's what keeps you people out of court. That's false. Now, of course, if it's a frivolous case and it's vexatious litigation, you'll be assessed court costs and attorney's fees, called Rule 11 sanctions. But, you know, if you've got a legitimate case, then you don't need to be concerned about that. And I always recommend to my students, you want to make sure that your case is 100% legitimate and above board and absolutely provable, so you got names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and come in and prove it. Well, anyway, Tim was asking for $32,000, so that's how I knew that it cost the insurance company $32,000. You know how much I spent on that case? I spent less than $2,000. And I can take a case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court for $2,000. Did you know that's called a pro se litigant? And so I said to Tim, I said, now you spent $32,000, and I'm going to do this case over again. And it's going to cost you $32,000 again next time. And then you'll beat me next time, and then I'm going to do it to you a third time. And then you'll spend another $32,000, and I'll spend two. And I said, here's what the bottom line is. I've got more $2,000 bills than your insurance company has $32,000 bills. and before I quit, you'll quit. Now, that's the way that game is played. And I learned that from an old federal judge up in Boise, Idaho. His name is Judge Callison. He told me that. He said, the only guy that cares about your rights is the claims manager of the insurance company. See, the insurance company doesn't care about rights and rights issues. They just care about policies, premiums, and profit. Always remember that. Policies, premiums, and profit. I don't care about civil rights. I care about civil rights. You care about civil rights. You care about your rights. The insurance company doesn't. And they're not interested in enforcing a law such as identify yourself in Deming, New Mexico. And Fred settled the case out of court. Well, it was $10,000-$12,000. It wasn't a hell of a lot of money, but it did this. The agreement called for you pay me the $10,000, but you take that ordinance off the books. And they did. Now, if you want to make some meaningful changes in your local area, then you need to catch the police breaking the law. And they break the law all the time. If you think the police are always out here obeying the law, listen to this story. I got to tell you this story. This is called strip search. It's a strip search award, the largest yet, with 25 more cases to go. Now, this occurred, what's the date on this? Well, I got October 1985 from USA Today, so I'm going to presume that this is when this occurred. But here's the story. The $112,000 award to a 38-year-old doctor who was strip searched by Chicago police in January 1978. Is the largest of 11 verdicts that arose from a 1979 class action against the city of Chicago with 24 more cases still to be tried in federal court. The doctor has been afraid of police since the search to a degree that hinders her normal activities and social relationships, said attorney Susan M. Vance of Mandel, Lipton, and Stevenson Limited, one of the doctor's attorneys. I'll just parenthetically point out, that's probably phony. That doctor has got paid $112,000. She said, I've had enough of this crap. And I doubt if she's emotionally distressed because she got arrested and sent off to the slammer for a day or two. But that's what you claim. See, that's one of your claims. Makes the jury feel sorry for you, especially if you're a girl. Now, after being stopped for a traffic violation, the doctor had been unable to make bond and was subjected to a then routine strip search. Hold it. Hang on a second. This sounds like an ACLU sting to me. Huh? Wait a minute. Have you ever met a medical doctor that couldn't make bail on a traffic charge? I never heard of such a thing. That's crazy on its face. How much was the bail? $1,000? You mean to tell me that this medical doctor didn't have $1,000 on a crummy misdemeanor to make bail? Well, okay, now listen. That tells me that the doctor didn't want to make bail. That she, like Rosa Parks, was sent in there by the ACLU. And what we want is a reputable person in the community. Well, what more reputable person can you have in the community than a doctor? I mean, look, you don't want, if you're going to do a sting against a city and you want to change public policy, you don't go down here and get an ex-convict. You don't come down here and get some drug addict off of Skid Row. You have to have a reputable member of, an upstanding member of the society. And a medical doctor is just one of the best goats that you can get. And that's what you got here. You got a doctor who's going out here and testing the law. And so anyway, they arrest her and they lock her up. Now, the largest previous strip search award against the city was $60,000. Vance estimated that 500,000 women were strip searched between 1952 and 79 when the Chicago Police Department's policy of strip searching all arrested females was found unconstitutional by U.S. District Judge Thomas R. McMillan. And McMillan's ruling in a class action brought by the American Civil Liberties Union. Aha! See what I'm telling you here, boys and girls? The ACLU set this up. And that's because the city of Chicago had a policy. Now, here's what their policy entailed. They still have it today, but they just use it a little differently. They instruct all their policemen. They say, here, you're driving down the street, and you see a woman driving alone. She's by herself in a car. You get behind her, and you get real close to her, and you make her real nervous, see? You make her nervous because you got this cop following. He'll follow you for a mile, 5 miles as far as it takes. And pretty soon you're going to change lanes without signaling. Or you're going to run a stop sign. Or you're going to do something, which gives him probable cause to stop. Now, when he stops you, he's going to ask you for your driver's license, registration, and insurance. And then, like as not, you'll have your driver's license, but you won't have your insurance card, but you might, and maybe your car isn't registered. He'll find something. Then he'll give you a ticket. Or, you know, he might hit pay dirt and you don't have a driver's license, and so now he's going to arrest you. Now, if he arrests you, he takes you down and he collects an interest-free bail. He has you post bail of $300. Now, look what he's got. He's got an interest-free bail, $300 for the county. They're going to fine you $200 of it. And then he's accomplished his goal. See, I have students that come from the Chicago Police Department to come to school here. And then I ask them, well, tell me about these policies that you've got up there. Now, in Chicago today, the policemen are all instructed that during their shift, they should give somebody a ticket, or two or three if they can, which will at least cover their day's wages. That's the minimum. And if they want to be an especially productive policeman, they should give two or three tickets, which makes two or three times the amount of the policeman's salary. And this is an extra tax on the community, because what this is, you people think the policeman out there, the thin blue line, his job is to protect the public. No. It's to generate money for the city. He's a revenue agent. He gets paid $50,000 a year, but he hands out tickets. He hands out taxes of $150,000 a year. Minimum $50,000 to cover his expenses. Cover the expenses of the city. And then turn a profit if you can. It's a business. The police department is a business. And the jail, when they lock you up, is like a Holiday Inn. And they have a vacancy record. They have a vacancy problem just like an apartment house has. And they need to fill it up. And they fill it up every Friday night with drunks and all kinds of people. And then they run them through the judicial system. And they fine them. And this is what I call the law enforcement growth industry. It's a business. Makes money. It's nothing personal, boys and girls. It's just business. Now listen to this. 500,000 women between 1952 and 79. Let's see, 52, 62, 72. In about 27 years here. In 27 years, they've got a policy on the books, which is unconstitutional. So this is a criminal operation for 27 years. And in that 27 years, how many dollars did they collect? Well, 500,000 women were strip searched. If they were strip searched, they were all arrested. If they were all arrested, most of them, statistically, 94% of them were convicted. And if the 94% ratio, which is the standard average, were convicted, they all paid fines. Can you see what that's worth? Now, this doctor here and the ACLU said, you know, enough already. And so she goes out here and she gets arrested and she gets jailed and she sues and she collects $112,000. And one before that collected $60,000. And the purpose that the ACLU or the NAACP or these individuals, the purpose for their actions is to stop these kinds of abusive practices. Now, the city of Chicago is probably self-insured, but most of these little towns like Deming, New Mexico, isn't. They've got an insurance company there. And if you want to make an impression on the insurance company, you need to burn them. Now remember, the insurance company is burning you in Biloxi, Mississippi. The insurance company is burning you on your health insurance and your auto insurance. And they go to the legislature. They got a symbiotic relationship with the legislature to enact laws to protect the bottom line of the insurance industry and to screw you. That's the business. That's what they're there for. So if you think that your representatives and your politicians are there to protect you, Charlie, you cut your head up the wrong end again today. Come on, let's wake up here and smell the coffee. So you and I need to have a solution to this, you know. And what are you going to do about it? Well, number one, I took a look at it and I said, well, I'm not going to have this fire insurance. If the insurance company can make $16 for every dollar they pay out, then George Gordon can make $16 for every dollar he pays out. And that's what I'm doing. I'm self-insured. Same thing with health insurance, which is now about $12,000 a year. So if I stop eating pig, stop eating fat and blood, then I can reasonably be assured that I'm not going to get sick. I follow these 19 health laws. That's what guarantees me my $12,000 a year in health insurance premiums. That's what guarantees me my house isn't going to burn down. And then by using a little common sense, you know, do you think that building a house or living 25 feet below sea level is a good idea? Just a little common sense ought to tell you that living in the Ninth Ward probably wasn't a good location anyway. Why don't you think about Baton Rouge? I mean, if you think Louisiana's all that good, why don't you just move up to a little higher ground? Move north. The ground gets higher the further north you move. And pretty soon, you know, you'll be up out of the flood zone, and pretty soon you don't need the hurricane insurance, and you don't need the flood insurance. See, I live up on a ridge. I'm 1,200 feet above sea level. They ain't never, well, the last flood we had here was called Noah's Flood. That was our last flood here on this particular location. So you can see I save a lot of money on my flood insurance. Now, if I wanted to live down, you know, in St. Louis, or I wanted to live along the Mississippi River, now you've got a little higher hazard there. Well, you got higher premiums there, too. Now, I live in Tornado Alley, and, you know, there's some things you can do about Tornado Alley. For instance, first of all, it only kills 69 people a year, and tornadoes aren't that threatening. You know that? And here's the way I got it figured. With the premiums that I'm saving on health insurance, and the premiums I'm saving on fire insurance, and the premiums I'm saving on tornado insurance, hell, I got enough money in my pot now. When my house blows down, I'll build another one. And you can do the same thing. And so can everybody else. Now, these big buildings, you know, that the insurance companies built, like the John Hancock Building in Chicago. Okay. When insurance companies like Bank of America and John Hancock build those big buildings, they build those out of their profits, and they make a lot of money. And if their business is profitable, you can emulate their business and be just as profitable. Insurance is really profitable business. That's why I got into it. I'm in the insurance business. I have the George Gordon Insurance Company, and I insure the George Gordon house. And I'm in the utility business, and I've got the George Gordon Water Company. And I find that by doing that and practicing the Ten Commandment model, I make money at it. And I'm not paying my money out to the Red Squad abuses or the strip search people in Chicago and so on. And then there's this little added benefit. I get to tweak the insurance company's nose every once in a while. Now, when the policeman or the bureaucrat or the government official violates your rights, you know, oftentimes people will call the law school and say, well, these people down here, they just don't have any respect at all for us. You know, I pay my taxes and I'm a taxpayer. And so, and that's right. Why would the public officials have any respect for somebody that doesn't know what his rights are, can't enforce his rights, who's an easy mark, easy to take advantage of? Why don't you learn the law so that you're not an easy mark? And every time somebody messes with you, he gets a bloody nose. You know, when the bully gets a bloody nose about the third or fourth time from you, Even if he can whip you, he'll leave you alone. Got a guy one time, I'll tell you this little story. His name was Danny. I forgot his last name now. He's a big kid. He's bigger than I was, you know, in the 10th grade in Arcata High School. Anyway, I transferred over there from Eureka, and I was a public speaker in the Future Farmers of America, and I'd won the competition. And, of course, I beat the Arcata guy and the Ferndale guy and the there's another school there. Fortuna, Arcata, Eureka, and Ferndale were in the competition, and I was from Eureka, and so I beat them. Beat those other three schools. Well, when I transferred to Arcata, this guy Danny, he remembered that. See, I was in the Future Farmers, and we were out in the shop, and he came over to me, and he hit me in the arm, and he said, "Welcome to Arcata High." What a welcome. Busted me in the arm and said, "Welcome to Arcata High." Now, I could tell right away that this guy wasn't my friend. So, I was kind of recovering from the pain. He hit me in the left arm, and I'm right-handed. So, I hauled off, and I busted that kid right in the mouth. And I was kind of lucky, and I knocked him right on his can. And from his position down there on the floor, he figured out what had happened, and we went after it. And he kind of whipped me. I mean, it wasn't that I could whip him. You know, he could take me on and punish me, and he did. And we were kicked out of school there for about, oh, I think it was 2 or 3 days, balance of the week. Came back on the following Monday, and we got into it again. And I busted him in the mouth a second time. Just the luck of the Irish. And I knocked him on his hiney again. And drew blood both times. Just like my daddy told me. Drew blood both times. He got up and we got after it. And he whipped me again. So this second account or this second event proved without a doubt that in the final analysis, when little Georgie and Danny got into it, Danny can whip little Georgie any day of the week. And he did twice. So, he went down to the Dean of Boys, and he kicked us out of school for the rest of the week, and we came back the following Monday. Now, it was with a little trepidation on my part that I went into the ag shop. But I went in there just like I always did, and Danny did not come over to talk to me. In fact, Danny made himself real scarce. Danny never talked to me again. That was the last time I'd had a conversation. I wasn't anxious to talk to Danny either. And I'm sure that Danny knew that any time he wanted to take on Georgie Gordon, he could do it and whip me. But he also knew that every time he did that, he was going to bleed and he was going to hurt real bad. Now, just remember that. Every time you take on the insurance company or the government, you need to draw blood, and they need to hurt real bad every time. They can whip you. They're bigger than you are. But you know they're sensitive to pain just like you and I are. And then when you bust them in the mouth and you hurt them, then pretty soon they say, "You know, I think I'll just leave that guy alone. I'll pick on somebody easier to pick on." All right, so there's that story, and there's the solution to the problem. So let's pick up my paper here and give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.